I should have paid her, but I only got $5 to my name. She said she didn't want no money. Here, roll in under here and grab a holt. I'll tap her loose. Then you turn out that bolt, and I turn out my end, and we let her down easy. Careful that gasket, see? She comes off in one piece. There's only 4 cylinders to these here old Dodges. I took one down one time. Got main bearings big as a cantaloupe. Now, let her down. Hold it. Reach up and pull down that gasket where it stuck. Easy now. There. The greasy pan lay on the ground between them, and a little oil still lay in the wells. Tom reached into one of the front wells and picked out some broken pieces of Babbitt. There she is, he said. He turned the Babbitt in his fingers. Shafts up. Look in back and get the crank. Turn her over till I tell you. Casey got to his feet and found the crank and fitted it.
Ready?
Reach. Now, easy. Little more. Little more. Right there. Casey kneeled down and looked under again. Tom rattled the connecting rod bearing against the shaft. There she is.
Whatcha suppose done it? Casey asked.
Oh, hell, I don't know. This buggy been on the road 13 years. Says 60,000 miles on the speedometer. That means 160, and God knows how many times they turn the numbers back. Gets hot. Maybe somebody let the oil get low. Just went out. He pulled the cotter pins and put his wrench on a bearing bolt. He strained, and the wrench slipped. A long gash appeared on the back of his hand. Tom looked at it. The blood flowed evenly from the wound and met the oil and dripped into the pan.
That's too bad, Casey said. Want I should do that and you wrap up your hand?
Hell no. I never fixed no car in my life without cutting myself. Now it's done, I don't have to worry no more. He fitted the wrench again. Wished I had a crescent wrench, he said, and he hammered the wrench with the butt of his hand until the bolts loosened. He took them out and laid them with the pan bolts in the pan and the cotter pins with them. He loosened the bearing bolts and pulled out the piston. He put piston and connecting rod in the pan. There, by God. He squirmed free from under the car and pulled the pan out with him. He wiped his hand on a piece of gunny sacking and inspected the cut. Bleeding like a son of a bitch, he said. Well, I can stop that. He urinated on the ground, picked up a handful of the resulting mud, and plastered it over the wound. Only for a moment did the blood ooze out, and then it stopped. Best damn thing in the world to stop bleeding, he said.
Handful of spider web'll do it, too, said Casey.
I know, but there ain't no spider web, and you can always get piss. Tom sat on the running board and inspected the broken bearing. Now if we can only find a 25 Dodge and get a used Conrod and some shims, maybe we'll make her all right. Al must have gone a hell of a long ways.
The shadow of the billboard was 60 feet out by now. The afternoon lengthened away. Casey sat down on the running board and looked westward.
We're gonna be in high mountains pretty soon, he said.
And he was silent for a few moments. Then,
Tom?
Yeah?
Tom, I've been watching the cars on the road. Them we passed, and them that passed us. I've been keeping track.
Track of what?
Tom, there's hundreds of families like us all a-going west. I watched. There ain't none of them going east. Hundreds of them. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I noticed.
Why, it's like they was running away from soldiers. It's like a whole country is moving.
Yeah, Tom said. They's a whole country moving. We're moving, too.
Well, suppose all these here folks and everybody, suppose they can't get no jobs out there.
God damn it, Tom cried. How'd I know? I'm just putting one foot in front of the other. I done it at Mac for 4 years, just marching in cell and out cell and in mess and out mess. Jesus Christ, I thought it'd be something different when I come out. Couldn't think of nothing in there, else you go stir happy. And now can't think of nothing.
He turned on Casey. This here Baron went out. We didn't know it was going, so we didn't worry none. Now she's out and we'll fix her. And by Christ, that goes for the rest of it. I ain't gonna worry. I can't do it. This here little piece of iron and Babbitt, see it? You see it? Well, that's the only goddamn thing in the world I got on my mind. I wonder where the hell Al is.
Casey said,
Now, look, Tom, what the hell? So goddamn hard to say anything.
Tom lifted the mud pack from his hand and threw it on the ground. The edge of the wound was lined with dirt. He glanced over to the preacher.
You're fixin' to make a speech, Tom said. Well, go ahead. I like speeches. Warden used to make speeches all the time. Didn't do us no harm, and he got a hell of a bang out of it. What are you trying to roll out?
Casey picked the backs of his long, knotty fingers.
There's stuff going on, and there's folks doing things. Them people laying one foot down in front of the other. Like you says, they ain't thinking where they're going, like you says, but they're all laying 'em down the same direction, just the same. And if you listen, you'll hear a moving and a sneaking and a rustling and a restlessness. There's stuff going on that the folks doing it don't know nothing about. Yet. There's gonna come something out of all these folks going west, out of all their farms left lonely. There's gonna come a thing that's gonna change the whole country.
Tom said, I'm still laying my dogs down one at a time.
Yep. But when a fence comes up at you, you're gonna climb that fence.
I climb fences when I got fences to climb, said Tom.
Casey sighed.
It's the best way. I gotta agree. But there's different kind of fences. There's folks like me that climbs fences that ain't even strung up yet, and can't help it.
Ain't that Al a-comin'? Tom asked.
Yep, looks like.
Tom stood up and wrapped the connecting rod and both halves of the bearing in the piece of sack.
Want to make sure I get the same, he said.
The truck pulled alongside the road, and Al leaned out the window. Tom said,
You was a hell of a long time. How far'd you go?
Al sighed.
Got the rod out?
Yeah. Tom held up the sack. Babbitt just broke down.
Well, it wasn't no fault of mine, said Al.
No. Where'd you take the folks?
We had a mess, Al said. Grandma got to bellerin', and that said Rosa Sharn off, and she bellered some. Got her head under a mattress and bellered. But Grandma, she was just a-layin' back her jaw and bayin' like a moonlight hound dog. Seems like Grandma ain't got no sense no more. Like a little baby. Don't speak to nobody, don't seem to recognize nobody. Just talks on like she's talking to Grandpa.
Where'd you leave him? Tom insisted.
Well, we come to a camp, got shade and got water and pipes. Cost half a dollar a day to stay there, but everybody's so goddamn tired and wore out and miserable, they stayed there. Ma says they got to 'cause Grandma's so tired and wore out. Got Wilson's tent up and got our tarp for a tent. I think Grandma gone nuts.
Tom looked toward the lowering sun.
Casey, he said, somebody gotta stay with this car or she'll get stripped. You just as soon?
Sure, I'll stay.
Al took a paper bag from the seat.
This here's some bread and meat Ma sent, and I got a jug of water here.
She don't forget nobody, said Casey.
Tom got in beside Al.
Look, he said, we'll get back just as soon as we can, but we can't tell how long.
I'll be here.
All right. Don't make no speeches to yourself. Get going, Al.
The truck moved off in the late afternoon.
He's a nice fella, Tom said. He thinks about stuff all the time.
Well, hell, if you've been a preacher, I guess you got to.
Pa's all mad about it costs 50 cents just to camp under a tree. He can't see that no ways, setting a cussing. Says next thing they'll sell you a little tank of air. But Ma says they gotta be near shade and water 'cause of Grandma.
The truck rattled along the highway, and now that it was unloaded, every part of it rattled and clashed. The sideboard of the bed, the cut body. It rode hard and light. Al put it up to 38 miles an hour, and the engine clattered heavily and a blue smoke of burning oil drifted up through the floorboards.
Cut her down some, Tom said. You gonna burn her right down to the hubcaps. What's eating on Grandma?
I don't know.
Remember last couple days she'd been airy-nary, saying nothing to nobody? Well, she's yelling and talking plenty now. Only she's talking to Grandpa, yelling at him. Kind of scary, too. You can almost see him a-sitting there grinning at her the way he always done, a finger in hisself and grinning. Seems like she sees him a-sitting there, too. She's just giving him hell. Say, Pa, he give me $20 to hand you? He don't know how much you're gonna need. Ever see Ma stand up to him like she done today?
Not I remember. I sure did pick a nice time to get paroled. I figured I was gonna lay around and get up late and eat a lot when I come home. I was going out and dance, and I was gonna go tomcatting. And here I ain't had time to do none of them things.
Al said, I forgot. Ma give me a lot of stuff to tell you. She says don't drink nothing, and don't get in no arguments, and don't fight nobody, because she says she's scared you'll get sent back.
She got plenty to get worked up about without me giving her no trouble, said Tom.
Well, we could get a couple beers, can't we? I'm just a raving for a beer.
I don't know, said Tom. Pa'd crap a litter of lizards if we'd buy beers.
Well, look, Tom, I got $6. You and me could get a couple pints and go down the line. Nobody don't know I got that $6. Christ, we could have a hell of a time for ourselves.
Keep your jack, Tom said. When we get out to the coast, you and me'll take her and we'll raise hell. Maybe when we're working. He turned in the seat.
I didn't think you was a fella to go down the line. I figured you was talking him out of it.
Well, hell, I don't know nobody here. If I'm gonna ride around much, I'm gonna get married. I'm gonna have me a hell of a time when we get to California.
Hope so, said Tom.
You ain't sure of nothing no more.
No, I ain't sure of nothing.
When you killed that fella, did you ever dream about it or anything? Did it worry you?
No.
Well, didn't you never think about it?
Sure. I was sorry 'cause he was dead.
You didn't take no blame to yourself?
No. I'd done my time, and I'd done my own time.
Was it awful bad there?
Tom said nervously, Look, Al, I'd done my time, and now it's done. I don't want to do it over and over. There's a river up ahead, and there's a town. Let's just try and get a Conrad and the hell with the rest of it.
Ma's awful partial to you, said Al. She mourned when you was gone. Done it all to herself, kind of crying down inside of her throat. We could tell what she was thinking about, though.
Tom pulled his cap down low over his eyes.
Now look here, Al. Suppose we talk about some other stuff.
I was just telling you what Ma done.
I know, but I'd rather not. I'd rather just lay one foot down in front of the other.
Al relapsed into an insulted silence.
I was just trying to tell you, he said after a moment.
Tom looked at him, and Al kept his eyes straight ahead. The lightened truck bounced noisily along. Tom's long lips drew up from his teeth, and he laughed softly.
I know you was, Al. Maybe I'm kind of stir nuts. I'll tell you about it sometime, maybe. You see, it's just something you want to know, kind of interesting. But I got a kind of funny idea. The best thing it'd be if I forget about it for a while. Maybe in a little while it won't be that way. Right now, when I think about it, my guts gets all droopy and nasty feeling. Look here, Al. I'll tell you one thing. The jailhouse is just a kind of way of driving a guy slowly nuts. See? And they go nuts, and you see them and hear them. And pretty soon you don't know if you're nuts or not. When they get to screaming in the night sometimes, you think it's you doing the screaming. Sometimes it is. Al said, Oh, I won't talk about it no more, Tom. 30 days is all right, Tom said, and 180 days is all right, but over a year, I don't know. There's something about it that ain't like nothing else in the world. Something screwy about it. Something screwy about the whole idea of locking people up. Oh, the hell with it. I don't want to talk about it. Look at the sun a-flashing on them windows. The truck drove to the service station belt. There on the right-hand side of the road was a wrecking yard, an acre lot surrounded by a high barbed wire fence, a corrugated iron shed in front, with used tires piled up by the doors and price-marked. Behind the shed, there was a little shack built of scrap lumber, and pieces of tin. The windows were windshields built into the walls. In the grassy lot, the wrecks lay. Cars with twisted stove-in noses, wounded cars lying on their sides with the wheels gone, engines rusting on the ground and against the shed, a great pile of junk, fenders and truck sides, wheels and axles, over the whole lot a spirit of decay, of mold and rust, twisted iron, half-gutted engines, a mass of derelicts. Al drove the truck up on the oily ground in front of the shed. Tom got out and looked into the dark doorway. "Don't see nobody," he said, and he called, "Anybody here? Jesus, I hope they got a 25 Dodge." Behind the shed, a door banged. A specter of a man came through the dark shed. Thin, dirty, oily skin tight against stringy muscles. One eye was gone, and the raw, uncovered socket squirmed with eye muscles when his good eye moved. His jeans and shirt were thick and shiny with old grease, and his hands caked and lined and cut. His heavy, pouting underlip hung out sullenly. Tom asked, "You the boss?" The one eye glared.
"I work for the boss," he said sullenly. "What you want?"
"Got a wrecked 25 Dodge? We need a Conrad."
"I don't know. The boss was here, he could tell you, but he ain't here. He's went home."
"Can we look and see?"
The man blew his nose into the palm of his hand and wiped his hand on his trousers.
"You from hereabouts?"
"Come from east, going west."
"Look around, then. Burn the goddamn place down, for all I care."
"Looks like you don't love your boss none."
The man shambled close, his one eye flaring.
"I hate him," he said softly. "I hate the son of a bitch. Gone home now. Gone home to his house."
The words fell stumbling out.
He got a way of picking a fella and a tearing a fella. He's the son of a bitch. Got a girl, 19, purty, says to me, "How'd you like to marry her?" Says that right to me. And tonight, says, "They's a dance. How'd you like to go?" Me. He says it to me.
Tears formed in his eyes, and tears dripped from the corner of the red eye socket.
"Someday, by God, someday I'm going to have a pipe wrench in my pocket. When he says them things, he looks at my eye, and I'm going to just take his head right down off his neck with that wrench, little piece at a time."
He panted with his fury,
"little piece at a time, right down off of his neck."
The sun disappeared behind the mountains. Al looked into the lot at the wrecked cars.
"Over there, look, Tom. That there looks like a 25 or 26.
Tom turned to the one-eyed man. "Mind if we look?"
"Hell no. Take any goddamn thing you want."
They walked, threading their way among the dead automobiles, to a rusting sedan resting on flat tires.
"Sure, it's a 25, Al cried. "Can we yank off the pan, mister?"
Tom kneeled down and looked under the car. "Pan's off already. One rod's been took. Looks like one gone." He wriggled under the car.
"Get a crank and turn her over, Al."
He worked the rod against the shaft. pretty much froze with grease. Al turned the crank slowly.
Easy,
Tom called. He picked a splinter of wood from the ground and scraped the cake of grease from the bearing and the bearing bolts.
How is she for tight?
Al asked.
Well, she's a little loose, but not bad.
Well, how is she for war?
Got plenty shim. Ain't been all took up.
Yeah, she's okay. Turn her over easy now. Get her down, easy.
There.
Run over the truck and get some tools. The one-eyed man said,
I'll get you a box of tools.
He shuffled off among the rusty cars, and in a moment he came back with a tin box of tools. Tom dug out a socket wrench and handed it to Al.
You take her off. Don't lose no shims, and don't let the bolts get away. And keep track of the cotter pins. Hurry up, the light's getting dim.
Al crawled under the car.
We ought to get us a set of socket wrenches, he called. Can't get in no place with a monkey wrench.
Yell out if you want a hand, Tom said.
The one-eyed man stood helplessly by.
I'll help you if you want, he said. Know what that son of a bitch done? He come by, and he got on white pants, and he says, come on, let's go out to my yacht. By God, I'll wang him someday.
He breathed heavily.
I ain't been out with a woman since I lost my eye. And he says stuff like that.
And big tears cut channels in the dirt beside his nose. Tom said impatiently,
why don't you roll on? Got no guards to keep you here.
Yeah, that's easy to say. Ain't so easy to get a job. Not for a one-eyed man.
Tom turned on him.
Now look a here, fella. You got that eye wide open and you're dirty. You stink. You just asking for it. You like it. Lets you feel sorry for yourself, 'cause you can't get no woman with that empty eye flapping around. Put something over it and wash your face. You ain't hitting nobody with no pipe wrench.
I tell you, a one-eyed fella got a hard row, the man said. Can't see stuff the way other fellas can. Can't see how far off a thing is. Everything's just flat.
Tom said, you're full of crap.
Why, I know a one-legged whore one time. Thinks she was taking two bits in an alley? No, by God, she's getting half a dollar extra.
She says, how many one-legged women you slept with?
None, she says.
Okay, she says, you got something pretty special here, and it's gonna cost you half a buck extra. And by God, she was getting them too, and the fellas coming out thinking they're pretty lucky. She says she's good luck. And I knowed a humpback in a place I was, make his whole living letting folks rub his hump for luck. Jesus Christ, and all you got is one eye gone.
The man said stumblingly,
well, Jesus, you see somebody edge away from you and it gets into you.
Cover it up then, God damn it. You're sticking it out like a cow's ass. You like to feel sorry for yourself. There ain't nothing the matter with you. Buy yourself some white pants. You getting drunk and crying in your bed, I bet.
Need any help, Al?
Nope, said Al. I got this here bearing loose just trying to work the piston down.
Don't bang yourself, said Tom.
The one-eyed man said softly,
think somebody'd like me?
Why, sure, said Tom. Tell them your dong's growed since you lost your eye.
Where are you fellas going?
California, whole family. Gonna get work out there.
Well, you think a fella like me could get work? Black patch in my eye?
Why not? You ain't no cripple.
Well, could I catch a ride with you fellas?
Christ, no. We're so goddamn full now we can't move. You get out some other way. Fix up one of these here wrecks and go out by yourself.
Maybe I will, by God, said the one-eyed man.
There was a clash of metal.
I got her,
Al called.
Well, bring her out. Let's look at her.
Al handed him the piston and the connecting rod and the lower half of the bearing. Tom wiped the Babbitt surface and sighted along it sideways.
Looks okay to me, he said. Say, by God, if we had a light, we could get this here in tonight.
Say, Tom, Al said, I've been thinking, we got no ring clamps.
Gonna be a job getting them rings in, especially underneath.
Tom said, You know, a fella told me one time you wrap some fine brass wire around the ring to hold her.
Yeah, but how you gonna get the wire off?
You don't get her off. She melts off and don't hurt nothing.
Copper wire'd be better.
It ain't strong enough, said Tom. He turned to the one-eyed man. Got any fine brass wire?
I don't know. I think there's a spool somewhere. Where do you think a fella could get one of them patches one-eye fellas wear?
I don't know, said Tom. Let's see if you can find that wire.
In the iron shed, they dug through boxes until they found the spool. Tom set the rod in a vise and carefully wrapped the wire around the piston rings, forcing them deep into their slots. And where the wire was twisted, he hammered it flat. And then he turned the piston and tapped the wire all around until it cleared the piston wall. He ran his finger up and down to make sure that the rings and wire were flush with the wall. It was getting dark in the shed. The one-eyed man brought a flashlight and shone its beam on the work.
There she is, said Tom. Say, what do you take for that light?
Well, it ain't much good. Got 15 cents in new batteries. You can have her for 35 cents.
Okay. And what we owe you for this here Conrod and piston?
The one-eyed man rubbed his forehead with a knuckle, and a line of dirt peeled off.
Well, sir, I just dunno. If the boss is here, he'd go to a parts book, and he'd find out how much is a new one, and why you was working. He'd be finding out how bad you're hung up, how much jack you got, and then he'd, well, say it's $8 in the part book. He'd make a price of $5. And if you put up a squawk, you'd get it for $3. You say it's all me, but by God, he's a son of a bitch. Figures how bad you need it. I seen him get more for a ring gear than he'd give for the whole car.
Yeah, but how much am I gonna give you for this here?
About $1, I guess.
All right. And I'll give you a quarter for this here socket wrench. Make it twice as easy.
He handed over the silver.
Thank you. And cover up that goddamn eye.
Tom and Al got into the truck. It was deep dark. Al started the motor and turned on the lights.
So long, Tom called. See you maybe in California.
They turned across the highway and started back. The one-eyed man watched them go, and then he went through the iron shed to a shack behind. It was dark inside. He felt his way to the mattress on the floor, and he stretched out and cried in his bed. And the cars whizzing by on the highway only strengthened the walls of his loneliness.
Tom said, If you'd told me we'd get this here thing and get her in tonight, I'd have said you was nuts.
We'll get her in all right, said Al. You got to do her, though. I'd be scared I'd get her too tight and she'd burn out, or too loose and she'd hammer out.
I'll stick her in, said Tom. If she goes out again, she goes out. I got nothing to lose.
Al peered into the dusk. The lights made no impression on the gloom, but ahead the eyes of a hunting cat flashed green in reflection of the lights.
You sure give that fella hell, Al said. Sure did tell him where to lay down his dogs.
Well, goddammit, he was asking for it. Just a patting hisself 'cause he got one eye. Putting all the blame on his eye. He's a lazy, dirty son of a bitch. Maybe he can snap out of it if he knowed people was wise to him.
Al said,
Tom, it wasn't nothing I done burned out that baron.
Tom was silent for a moment then.
I'm gonna take a fall out of you, Al. You just scrabbling ass over tit, fear somebody gonna pin some blame on you. I know what's the matter, young fella. All full of piss and vinegar. Want to be a hell of a guy all the time, but... God damn it, Al. Don't keep your guard up when nobody ain't sparring with you. You're gonna be all right.
Al did not answer him. He looked straight ahead. The truck rattled and banged over the road. A cat whipped out from the side of the road and Al swerved to hit it. But the wheels missed and the cat leaped into the grass.
Nearly got him, said Al. Say, Tom, you heard Connie talking how he's gonna study nights? I've been thinking maybe I'd study nights, too. You know, radio or television or diesel engines.
Fella might get started that away.
Might, said Tom. Find out how much they're gonna sock you for the lessons first. And figure out if you're gonna study 'em. There was fellas taking them mail lessons in McAllister. I never knowed one of 'em that finished up. Got sick of it and left 'em slide.
God almighty, we forgot to get something to eat.
Well, Ma sent down plenty. Preacher couldn't eat it all. Be some left. I wonder how long it'll take us to get to California. Christ, I don't know. Just plug away at her.
They fell into silence, and the dark came, and the stars were sharp and white. Casey got out of the back seat of the Dodge and strolled to the side of the road where the truck pulled up.
I never expected you so soon, he said.
Tom gathered the parts and the piece of sacking on the floor.
We was lucky, he said. Got a flashlight, too. Gonna fix her right up.
You forgot to take your dinner, said Casey.
I'll get it when I finish. Here, Al, pull off the road a little more and come hold the light for me.
He went directly to the Dodge and crawled under on his back. Al crawled under on his belly and directed the beam of the flashlight.
Not in my eyes. There, put her up.
Tom worked the piston up into the cylinder, twisting and turning. The brass wire caught a little on the cylinder wall. With a quick push, he forced it past the rings.
Lucky she's loose, or the compression would stop her. I think she's gonna work all right.
Hope that wire don't clog the rings, said Al.
Well, that's why I hammered her flat. She won't roll off. I think she'll just melt out and maybe give the walls a brass plate.
Think she might score the walls?
Tom laughed.
Jesus Christ, them walls can take it. She's drinking oil like a gopher hole already. A little more ain't gonna hurt none.
He worked the rod down over the shaft and tested the lower half.
She'll take some shim, he said. Casey?
Yeah?
I'm taking up this here bearing now. Get out to that crank and turn her over slow when I tell you.
He tightened the bolts.
Now, over slow.
And as the angular shaft turned, he worked the bearing against it.
Too much shim, Tom said.
Hold it, Casey.
He took out the bolts and removed thin shims from each side and put the bolts back.
Try her again, Casey.
And he worked the rod again.
She's a little bit loose yet. Wonder if she'd be too tight if I took out more shim. I'll try her.
Again he removed the bolts and took out another pair of the thin strips.
Now try her, Casey.
That looks good, said Al.
Tom called. She any harder to turn, Casey?
Nope, I don't think so.
Well, I think she's snug here. I hope to God she is. Can't hone no babbitt without tools. This here socket wrench makes her a hell of a lot easier.
Al said,
Boss of that yard gonna be pretty mad when he looks for that size socket, and she ain't there.
That's his screwing, said Tom. We didn't steal her.
He tapped the cotter pins in and bent the ends out.
I think that's good. Look, Casey, you hold the light while me and Al get this here pan up.
Casey knelt down and took the flashlight. He kept the beam on the working hands as they patted the gasket gently in place and lined the holes with the pan bolts. The two men strained at the weight of the pan, caught the end bolts, and then set in the others, and when they were all engaged, Tom took them up little by little until the pan settled evenly in against the gasket, and he tightened hard against the nuts.
I guess that's her, Tom said.
He tightened the oil tap, looked carefully up at the pan, and took the light and searched the ground.
There she is. Let's get the oil back in her.
They crawled out and poured the bucket of oil back in the crankcase. Tom inspected the gasket for leaks.
Okay, Al, turn her over, he said.
Al got into the car and stepped on the starter. The motor caught with a roar. Blue smoke poured from the exhaust pipe.
Throttle down, Tom shouted. She'll burn oil till that wire goes. Getting thinner now.
And as the motor turned over, he listened carefully.
Put up the spark and let her idle.
He listened again.
Okay, Al, turn her off. I think we done her. Where's that meat now?
You make a darn good mechanic,
Al said.
Why not? I worked in the shop a year.
We'll take her good and slow for a couple hundred miles, give her a chance to work in.
They wiped their grease-covered hands on bunches of weeds and finally rubbed them on their trousers. They fell hungrily on the boiled pork and swigged the water from the bottle.
I like to starve,
said Al.
What we gonna do now, go on to the camp?
I don't know, said Tom. Maybe they'd charge us an extra half buck. Let's go on and talk to the folks, tell them we're fixed. Then if they want to sock us extra, we'll move on. The folks will want to know. Jesus, I'm glad Ma stopped us this afternoon. Look around with the light, Al, see we don't leave nothing. Get that socket wrench in, we may need her again.
Al searched the ground with the flashlight.
Don't see nothing.
All right, I'll drive her. You bring the truck, Al.
Tom started the engine. The preacher got in the car. Tom moved slowly, keeping the engine at a low speed, and Al followed in the truck. He crossed the shallow ditch, crawling in low gear. Tom said,
These here Dodges can pull a house in low gear. She's sure ratioed down. Good thing for us. I want to break that barren in easy.
On the highway, the Dodge moved along slowly. The 12-volt headlights threw a short blob of yellowish light on the pavement. Casey turned to Tom.
Funny how you fellows can fix a car. Just light right in and fix her. I couldn't fix no car. Not even now when I seen you do it.
Got to grow into her when you're a little kid, Tom said. It ain't just knowing, it's more than that. Kids now can tear down a car without even thinking about it.
A jackrabbit got caught in the lights and he bounced along ahead, cruising easily, his great ears flopping with every jump. Now and then he tried to break off the road, but the wall of darkness thrust him back. Far ahead, bright headlights appeared and bore down on them. The rabbit hesitated, faltered, then turned and bolted toward the lesser lights of the Dodge. There was a small, soft jolt as he went under the wheels. The oncoming car swished by.
We sure squashed him, said Casey.
Tom said, Some fellas like to hit him. Gives me a little shakes every time. Car sounds okay. Them rings must have broke loose by now. She ain't smoking so bad.
You done a nice job, said Casey.
A small wooden house dominated the campground, and on the porch of the house a gasoline lantern hissed and threw its white glare in a great circle. Half a dozen tents were pitched near the house, and the car stood beside the tents. Cooking for the night was over, but the coals of the campfire still glowed on the ground by the camping places. A group of men had gathered to the porch where the lantern burned, and their faces were strong and muscled under the harsh white light, light that threw black shadows of their hats over their foreheads and eyes, and made their chins seem to jut out. They sat on the steps, and some stood on the ground, resting their elbows on the porch floor. The proprietor, a sullen, lanky man, sat in a chair on the porch. He leaned back against the wall, and he drummed his fingers on his knee. Inside the house, a kerosene lamp burned, but its thin light was blasted by the hissing glare of the gasoline lantern. The gathering of men surrounded the proprietor. Tom drove the Dodge to the side of the road and parked. Al drove through the gate in the truck.
No need to take her in, Tom said. He got out and walked through the gate to the white glare of the lantern.
The proprietor dropped his front chair legs to the floor and leaned forward.
You men want to camp here?
No, said Tom. We got folks here. Hi, Pa.
Pa, seated on the bottom step, said,
Thought you was going to be all weak. Get her fixed?
We was pig lucky, said Tom. Got a part for dark. We can get going first thing in the morning.
That's a pretty nice thing, said Pa. Ma's worried. Your grandma's off her chump.
Yeah, Al told me. She any better now?
Well, anyway, she's a-sleepin'.
The proprietor said,
If you want to pull in here and camp, it'll cost you 4 bits. Get a place to camp and water and wood, and nobody won't bother you.
What the hell, said Tom. We can sleep in the ditch right beside the road and it won't cost nothing.
The owner drummed his knee with his fingers.
Deputy sheriff comes on by in the night.
Might make it tough for you.
Got a law against sleeping out in this state. Got a law about vagrants.
If I pay you half a dollar, I ain't a vagrant, huh?
That's right.
Tom's eyes glowed angrily.
Deputy sheriff ain't your brother-in-law by any chance.
The owner leaned forward.
No, he ain't. And the time ain't come yet when us local folks got to take no talk from you goddamn bums, neither.
It don't trouble you none to take our 4 bits. And when we get to be bums, we ain't asked you for nothing. All of us bums, huh? Well, we ain't asking no nickels from you for the chance to lay down and rest.
The men on the porch were rigid, motionless, quiet. Expression was gone from their faces, and their eyes and the shadows under their hats moved secretly up to the face of the proprietor. Pa growled,
"Come off it, Tom."
"Sure, I'll come off it." The circle of men were quiet, sitting on the steps, leaning on the high porch. Their eyes glittered under the harsh light of the gas lantern. Their faces were hard in the hard light, and they were very still. Only their eyes moved from speaker to speaker, and their faces were expressionless and quiet. A lamp bug slammed into the lantern and broke itself and fell into the darkness. In one of the tents, a child wailed in complaint, and a woman's soft voice soothed it and then broke into a low song.
Jesus loves you in the night. Sleep good, sleep good. Jesus watches in the night. Sleep, oh, sleep, oh.
The lantern hissed on the porch. The owner scratched in the V of his open shirt, where a tangle of white chest hair showed. He was watchful and ringed with trouble. He watched the men in the circle, watched for some expression, and they made no move. Tom was silent for a long time. His dark eyes looked slowly up at the proprietor.
I don't want to make no trouble, he said. It's a hard thing to be named a bum. I ain't afraid, he said softly. I'll go for you and your deputy with my mitts, here now or jump Jesus. But there ain't no good in it.
The men stirred, changed positions, and their glittering eyes moved slowly upward to the mouth of the proprietor, and their eyes watched for his lips to move. He was reassured. He felt that he had won, but not decisively enough to charge in.
Ain't you got half a buck? He asked.
Yeah, I got it, but I'm gonna need it. I can't set it out just for sleeping.
Well, we all got to make a living.
Yeah, Tom said. Only I wish there was some way to make her without taking her away from somebody else.
The men shifted again, and Pa said,
We'll get moving smart early. Look, mister, we paid. This here fella's part of our folks. Can he stay? We paid.
Half a dollar a car, said the proprietor.
Well, he ain't got no car. Car's out in the road.
He came in a car, said the proprietor. Everybody'd leave their car out there and come in and use my place for nothing.
Tom said,
We'll drive along the road. Meet you in the morning. We'll watch for you. Al can stay and Uncle John can come with us.
He looked at the proprietor.
That all right with you?
He made a quick decision, with a concession in it.
If the same number stays that come and paid, that's all right.
Tom brought out his bag of tobacco, a limp, gray rag by now, with a little damp tobacco dust in the bottom of it. He made a lean cigarette and tossed the bag away.
We'll go along pretty soon, he said.
Pa spoke generally to the circle.
It's dirt hard for folks to tear up and go. Folks like us that had our place.
We ain't shiftless. Till we got tractored off, we was people with a farm.
A young, thin man, with eyebrows sunburned yellow, turned his head slowly. "Croppin'?" he asked.
"Sure, we was sharecroppin'. Used to own the place."
The young man faced forward again. "Same as us," he said.
"Lucky for us, it ain't gonna last long," said Pa. "We'll get out west and we'll get work and we'll get a piece of growing land with water."
Near the edge of the porch, a ragged man stood. His black coat dripped torn streamers. The knees were gone from his dungarees. His face was black with dust and lined where sweat had washed through. He swung his head toward Pa.
"You folks must have a nice little pot of money."
"No, we ain't got no money," Pa said. "But they's plenty of us to work, and we're all good men. Get good wages out there, and we'll put 'em together. We'll make out."
The ragged man stared while Pa spoke, and then he laughed. And his laughter turned to a high, whinnying giggle. The circle of faces turned to him. The giggling got out of control and turned into coughing. His eyes were red and watering when he finally controlled the spasms.
You going out there? Oh, Christ.
The giggling started again.
You going out and get good wages? Oh, Christ.
He stopped and said slyly,
"Picking oranges, maybe? Gonna pick peaches?"
Pa's tone was dignified.
"We gonna take what they got. They got lots of stuff to work in."
The ragged man giggled under his breath. Tom turned irritably.
"What's so goddamn funny about that?"
The ragged man shut his mouth and looked sullenly at the porch boards.
"You folks all going to California, I bet."
"I told you that," said Pa. "You didn't guess nothing."
The ragged man said slowly,
"Me? I'm coming back. I've been there."
The faces turned quickly toward him. The men were rigid. The hiss of the lantern dropped to a sigh, and the proprietor lowered the front chair legs to the porch, stood up, and pumped the lantern until the hiss was sharp and high again. He went back to his chair, but he did not tilt back again. The ragged man turned toward the faces.
"I'm going back to starve. I'd rather starve all over at once."
Pa said,
"What the hell you talking about? I got a handbill says they got good wages, and a little while ago I seen a thing in the paper says they need folks to pick fruit."
The ragged man turned to Pa.
"You got any place to go? Back home?"
"No," said Pa. "We're out. They put a tractor past the house."
"You wouldn't go back then?"
"Course not."
"Then I ain't gonna fret you," said the ragged man.
"Course you ain't gonna fret me. I got a handbill says they need men. Don't make no sense if they don't need men. Cost money for them bills. They wouldn't put 'em out if they didn't need men."
"I don't want to fret you."
Pa said angrily,
"You done some jackassin'. You ain't gonna shut up now. My handbill says they need men. You laugh and say they don't. Now which one's a liar?"
The ragged man looked down into Pa's angry eyes. He looked sorry.
"Handbill's right," he said. "They need men."
"Then why the hell you stirring us up laughing?"
"'Cause you don't know what kind of men they need."
"What you talking about?"
The ragged man reached a decision.
"Look," he said, "how many men they say they want on your handbill?"
800, and that's in one little place."
"Orange color handbill?"
"Why, yes."
"Give the name of the fella. Says so-and-so labor contractor."
Pa reached in his pocket and brought out the folded handbill.
"That's right. How'd you know?"
"Look," said the man, "it don't make no sense. This fella wants 800 men, so he prints up 5,000 of them things, and maybe 20,000 people sees him.
and maybe 2,000-3,000 folks gets moving account of this here handbill. Folks that's crazy with worry.
But it don't make no sense, Pa cried.
Not till you see the fella that put out this here bill. You'll see him, or somebody that's working for him. You'll be a-camping by a ditch, you and 50 other families, and he'll look in your tent and see if you got anything left to eat. And if you got nothing, he says, want a job? And you'll say, I sure do, mister. I'll sure thank you for a chance to do some work. And he'll say, I can use you. And you'll say, when do I start? And he'll tell you where to go and what time, and then he'll go on. Maybe he needs 200 men, so he talks to 500, and they tell other folks, and when you get to the place, they's 1,000 men. This here fella says, I'm paying 20 cents an hour, and maybe half of the men walk off, but they's still 500 that's so goddamn hungry, they'll work for nothing but biscuits. Well, this here fella's got a contract to pick them peaches or chop that cotton, you see now? The more fellas he can get and the hungrier, less he's gonna pay. And he'll get a fella with kids if he can, cause... Hell, I says, I wasn't gonna fret you.
The circle of faces looked coldly at him. The eyes tested his words. The ragged man grew self-conscious.
I says I wasn't gonna fret you, and here I'm a-doing it. You gonna go on. You ain't going back.
The silence hung on the porch, and the light hissed, and a halo of moths swung around and around the lantern. The ragged man went on nervously.
Let me tell you what to do when you meet that fella, says he got work. Let me tell you. Ask him what he's gonna pay. Ask him to write down what he's gonna pay. Ask him that. I tell you, men, you're gonna get fooled if you don't.
The proprietor leaned forward in his chair, the better to see the ragged, dirty man. He scratched among the gray hairs on his chest. He said coldly,
You sure you ain't one of these here troublemakers? You sure you ain't a labor faker?
And the ragged man cried, I swear to God I ain't.
There's plenty of 'em, the proprietor said, going around, stirring up trouble, getting folks mad, chiseling in, there's plenty of 'em. Time's gonna come when we string 'em all up, all them troublemakers. We're gonna run 'em out of the country. Man wants to work, okay. If he don't, the hell with him. We ain't gonna let him stir up trouble.
The ragged man drew himself up. I tried to tell you folks, he said. Something it took me a year to find out. Took 2 kids dead. Took my wife dead to show me. But I can't tell you. I should have known that. Nobody couldn't tell me, neither. I can't tell you about them little fellas laying in the tent, with their bellies puffed out, and just skin on their bones, and shivering and whining like pups, and me running around trying to get work. Not for money. Not for wages. He shouted. Jesus Christ, just for a cup of flour and a spoon of lard. And in the corner come. Them children died of heart failure, he said. Put it on his paper. Shivering they was, and their bellies stuck out like a pig bladder.
The circle was quiet, and mouths were open a little. The men breathed shallowly and watched. The ragged man looked around at the circle, and then he turned and walked quickly away into the darkness. The dark swallowed him, but his dragging footsteps could be heard a long time after he had gone. Footsteps along the road, and a car came by on the highway, and its lights showed the ragged man shuffling along the road, his head hanging down, and his hands in the black coat pockets. The men were uneasy. One said,
Well, getting late. Got to get to sleep.
The proprietor said,
Probably shiftless. There's so goddamn many shiftless fellows on the road now.
And then he was quiet, and he tipped his chair back against the wall again and fingered his throat. Tom said, Guess I'll go see Ma for a minute, and then we'll shove along a piece. The Jode men moved away. Pa said,
Suppose he's telling the truth, that fella?
The preacher answered,
He's telling the truth, all right. The truth for him. He wasn't making nothing up.
How about us? Tom demanded. Is that the truth for us?
I don't know, said Casey.
I don't know, said Pa.
They walked to the tent. Tarpaulin spread over a rope, and it was dark inside and quiet. When they came near, a grayish mass stirred near the door and arose to person height. Ma came out to meet them.
All sleeping, she said.
Grandma finally dozed off. Then she saw it was Tom.
How'd you get here?
She demanded anxiously.
You ain't had no trouble.
Got her fixed, said Tom. We're ready to go when the rest is.
Thank the dear God for that, Ma said. I'm just a twitterin' to go on. Want to get where it's rich and green. Want to get there quick.
Pa cleared his throat.
Fella was just saying...
Tom grabbed his arm and yanked it. Funny what he says, Tom said. Says there's lots of folks on the way. Ma peered through the darkness at them. Inside the tent, Ruthie coughed and snorted in her sleep.
I washed 'em up, Ma said.
First water we got enough of to give 'em a going over. Left the buckets out for you fellas to wash too. Can't keep nothing clean on the road.
Everybody in?
Pa asked. All but Connie and Rosa Sharn. They went off to sleep in the open. Says it's too warm in undercover. Pa observed querulously.
That Rosa Sharn is getting awful scary and nimsy-mimsy.
It's a first, said Ma. Her and Connie sets a lot of store by it. You done the same thing.
We'll go now, Tom said.
Pull off the road a little piece ahead. Watch out for us if we don't see you. Be off right-hand side.
Al's staying?
Yeah.
Leave Uncle John come with us. Night, Ma.
They walked away through the sleeping camp. In front of one tent a low, fitful fire burned, and a woman watched a kettle that cooked early breakfast. The smell of the cooking beans was strong and fine.
Like to have a plate of them,
Tom said politely as they went by. The woman smiled.
They ain't done, or you'd be welcome, she said. Come around in the daybreak.
Thank you, ma'am, Tom said.
He and Casey and Uncle John walked by the porch. The proprietor still sat in his chair, and the lantern hissed and flared. He turned his head as the three went by.
You're running out of gas, Tom said.
Well, time to close up anyways.
No more half-bucks rolling down the road, I guess, Tom said.
The chair legs hit the floor.
Don't you go assassin me. I remember you. You're one of these here troublemakers.
Damn right, said Tom. I'm Bolsheviski.
There's too damn many of you kind of guys around.
Tom laughed as they went out the gate and climbed into the Dodge. He picked up a clod and threw it at the light. They heard it hit the house and saw the proprietor spring to his feet and peer into the darkness. Tom started the car and pulled into the road, and he listened closely to the motor as it turned over, listened for knocks. The road spread dimly under the weak lights of the car. Chapter 17. The cars of the migrant people crawled out of the side roads onto the great cross-country highway, and they took the migrant way to the west. In the daylight they scuttled like bugs to the westward, and as the dark caught them, they clustered like bugs near to shelter and to water. And because they were lonely and perplexed, because they had all come from a place of sadness and worry and defeat, and because they were all going to a new, mysterious place, they huddled together, they talked together, They shared their lives, their food, and the things they hoped for in the new country. Thus it might be that one family camped near a spring, and another camped for the spring